Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of each week we read back some messages from the mailbag. We've gotten a lot of good responses recently to our series on childhood amnesia, to recent Weird House Cinema episodes. But before we get into all that, Rob, do you want to read this message we got from Chandra Shekhar about the artifact episode you did on the origins of the pinata?
Absolutely. And by the way, this is not the individual's full name. We just had to double check that off mic here. Anyway, they write in and say, "Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for the fantastic podcast. I was listening to the latest episode, and when you read through the listener mail about the Philippines and the piñata, it occurred to me that we have something similar in India, too. Janmashtami is the birthday of a Hindu hero god, Krishan. He's widely known and one of the most popular gods, considering he spoke the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, closely translates to sayings of the god, where Bhagavan equals God and Gita equals speech. On his birthday, one of the widely celebrated traditions is to crack open a pot tied onto a vertical pulley system. It is a game where the striker has a stick and they run up and jump to hit the pot. Simultaneously, the pot is hoisted up on the pulley by other players, making it go out of reach. The game continues until a striker breaks the pot, which is filled with butter, coconut water, honey, and all the delicious stuff. In other traditions of Hinduism, people form giant human pyramids to reach the pot that is held high up in the sky by a crane or some other contraption. And I bet you that there are 100 or even more ways this same tradition is celebrated across India and the surrounding countries. Something you might find interesting. I would gladly listen to you two go down that rabbit hole and experience our beautiful culture. Spiral out."
Really interesting. I'd never heard of this before. Thanks for sending this.
Yeah.
All right. So we got a lot of messages on in response to our series on childhood amnesia. A lot of people wanted to share their earliest memories or memories that they think have come from before they were 3 years old. Let's see. We certainly can't feature all of the ones we've gotten already on this episode, but we'll plow through as many as we can. So I'm going to start with this message from longtime correspondent Jim in New Jersey.
Ah, yes.
Jim says, "Robert and Joe, some of my first memories involve seeing Mary Poppins in the theater in its original release. According to my mom, it was the weekend after the Kennedy assassination. She and some of her friends were growing weary of the depressing TV coverage of the tragedy in Dallas, Texas. So they decided to take their kids to the movies to see Mary Poppins. Based upon my mother's story, this would put my earliest memories before 2.5 years. Kennedy's assassination was in November 1963, but Mary Poppins wasn't released until August 1964, about 9 months later. My mom has definitely constructed a false memory of when we saw the movie. She loves this story so much that I don't have the heart to correct her. This places my Mary Poppins memory at a bit after age 3, which is a much more common age for early memory acquisitions. Once I realized the timeline disconnect, I tried to find what movie the moms could have taken the kids to see on that weekend. I was unable to find any Disney or family-based movies that seemed to fit the bill. The actual events are still a mystery to me, but I'm not curious enough to shatter my mother's memory by asking her. Jim.
This is interesting because it brings to mind, just in general, earliest memories of films seen. Because they occupy kind of an interesting place, because on one hand, they are milestone events, you know, the first time you take a child to a movie theater, your earliest cinema experiences. These are notable. Mm-hmm. They also can be attached to a timeline and can be fact checked to some degree. But the other interesting thing about them is that they seem highly susceptible to reinterpretation based on later viewings of the films. You know, like, I think back on the movies that I know I saw at an early age, and it's very easy to sort of build a false memory of what that would be like, because unlike other things in life, like, the movie is largely unchanged. You can account for, you know, changes in film quality and cuts and so forth, but for the most part, like, Mary Poppins is the same, and you can watch it now and you can get a 100% accurate representation of what the movie would have been when you saw it in the theater.
Of course, the interesting thing about seeing a movie is, of course, it is not just the document that contributes to your experience. It's like, you know, what you understand going into it, the environment you saw it in, mm-hmm. and all that stuff, especially when you're a little kid, because, like, when you're a little kid, you don't understand so many things about the stories told in movies. It just opens the door to all sorts of wild interpretations and associations that I think there would be less of when you're an adult and you essentially perceive the machinations of a plot more straightforwardly or realistically.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Jim, I totally understand what you're saying about, like, so, like, the way your mother tells the story of when you saw Mary Poppins cannot be correct, but not wanting to, you know, go, like, tell her that this story that she loves remembering and sharing with the family is wrong, because, I mean, I don't know what's really to be gained from that.
Right.
That's weird. But it also makes you wonder why. So if this cannot be what literally happened, why did she put together that false memory? Like, what is it about the experience of taking you to see Mary Poppins, which you do still remember, that she came to associate with that weekend of the Kennedy assassination?
Yeah. Fascinating to tease it all apart. All right. This next one comes to us from Renata. Renata's email is titled, "My Earliest Memories Are Nightmares."
Ooh.
"One of the wondrous things about memory that I think about every day is our ability to distinguish dream memories from other memories. Obviously, if I remember something totally strange and counterfactual, I will suspect it was a dream. But occasionally, I do have to stop and think if a mundane work conversation was actually a real event or a dream. Yet without fail, my brain picks up on something about dream memories that's different. It's like my brain puts that memory in a box called dreams, and if I find a memory there, it must be a dream. Like childhood amnesia, dreams seem to disappear really quickly in memory. Unless you write them down or rehearse remembering them, they get lost forever. And yet some of my earliest memories are dreams and, in fact, nightmares. Joe, you talked about a feeling of nostalgia that isn't like nostalgia from a toy or a moment, but more like being taken back to a specific emotional state of childhood. That's how I feel about marbles, due to one of my earliest nightmares, which happened when my father had an exotic fish tank. He put marbles in the tank as decoration. And one night I dreamt that they floated out of the tank and chased me around the living room trying to bite me like Pac-Man."
That is a really good childhood nightmare. I'm sure it must have been terrifying as a child, but yeah, thumbs up.
Now, I'm positive this was a real dream I had and not an implanted memory, because why would anyone be telling me a story of my dream? I'm not sure I've ever told anyone this dream until now. I know it must have occurred before my parents' divorce, so before the age of 5. When I recall that dream, and any time I look at a marble, I have that feeling of being transported, unfortunately not in a positive way. I don't have a phobia of marbles, but they have a sinister quality to me even now. Is it possible to implant a dream memory? I doubt it, but maybe. Plus, dreams and nightmares are bizarrely specific, so they aren't like memories of catching fireflies in a jar that could have been a more general experience. So early dreams and nightmares might be some of the earliest memories we can be sure are real memories, even though they are about things that never happened. I love the episodes about cognitive science topics. Best, Renata.
Great email, Renata. So yes, as I said, I love the idea of killer marbles coming out of the fish tank, attacking you like the ball from The Prisoner, except I guess they're much smaller. Yeah, I wonder about this. I mean, it is very interesting the way that we have a tendency to really rapidly forget dreams. I mean, even on the course of, you know, minutes after waking, they can become hard to recall. In fact, I almost seem to remember that we've read hypotheses before about why that would be, but I don't actually remember what the what the proposed answers are now. But yeah, that is very interesting that we tend to forget them so fast, but there are some that really stick. And I would tend to think that those are the ones that, much like our earliest childhood memories that we are likely to remember, they're the ones that we rehearse the most often, with the paradox being that by coming back to them and dwelling on them and thinking about them and talking about them more often, it's also more likely they are changing over time. And so we don't remember them actually the same way we did the first time we remembered them.
Yeah, this is a great topic, though, because I know in my case, there are nightmares I remember from my early childhood, from time periods where I really probably don't remember much else around them. You know, I mean, there are other scattered memories, but when you start lining them up, it's like, how many memories do I have from this year of my life? And how many of them are dreams and how many are reality? You know, like what would be the percentile there? It's probably kind of telling. Renata, thanks for writing in. That's a twofer. We get an earliest memory and an account of a dream. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, we also asked people, you know, if they have memories from before the typical threshold of about 3 years that's common for most people, if they believe they have memories from before this period, with the caveat that in most cases it's hard to verify whether these are real memories or later confabulations that now feel like memories. It's often hard to know for sure, but we did want to hear from people. And so we heard from Lindsay, who said, "Hello, I often think about what it means to be alive but not remember, especially as an infant. So your latest show, Before You Could Remember Part 1, was right up my alley. My earliest memory has to be when I was about 15 months old. I know it's not from a photo or anything because of the way I remember it, although I did see a photo later to confirm that what I remembered was actually an event that happened. My great-grandmother was in a nursing home until she died in April 1986. In April 1985, my great-aunt took her out and brought her home for Passover/Easter dinner. Parentheses, we didn't do a traditional Seder, but had a meal that conformed with being kosher for Passover while also celebrating Easter for my dad, who was Catholic. Close parentheses. The memory I have is my great-grandmother sitting in her wheelchair at the end of the table, set up in my great-aunt's living room. I'm taken out of my high chair and placed on her lap, sit there for a bit, and then clamber down to toddle over to the window. I remember walking up to the window and looking out because she had a very large picture window that went almost floor to ceiling, so the ledge of it was perfect for a toddler to lean on. The confirmation came from a photo taken of me sitting on my great-grandmother's lap and looking at the camera. I saw this photo years later as a child of 7 or 8, and I told my mother that I remembered my great-grandmother being at dinner, but I didn't remember having a picture taken of us. She said this was the only time my great-grandmother had been home like this since she was in the nursing home, so it would have been a very special time all around, and that's why the photo of us was taken. Perhaps this contributed to me being able to remember it, since it was a novel event. I am looking forward to hearing the other parts of the series. Sincerely, Lindsay." Yeah, I guess this would connect to research we talked about, I think, in part two of the series, where there is maybe some connection between the richness or novelty of new declarative memories and one's ability to remember them from an early age, especially if they get rehearsed in the mind or in conversation as time goes on.
Yeah. Now, for the sake of argument, it is interesting that this is a memory of remembering.
Yes.
And there's also media involved in the stirring of that memory.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on there that could, you can imagine where at a young age you see this picture of yourself and you may be, encouraged to remember what is in the picture, or you may, create that memory based on the photographic evidence you're presented with. And then later, as you remember that act of remembering, like you access the created memory of the thing,
Yeah, totally true. Now, again, of course, Lindsay, we're not telling you your memory is wrong. You don't actually remember that, but it is the thing that we all have to face about, like, it's hard to know, because if the memory were not real, it would still feel real.
Right. And this would be a case too of, if this is a created memory, well, then you have over time created a memory of value. Then and this,
yeah.
this is, you know, it's not only harmless, it's beneficial. So like, yeah, why not embrace it?
Totally. So thank you, Lindsay.
All right. This next one comes to us from Scott. Scott says, hi, Robert and Joe. Regarding your recent episode on childhood amnesia and memory, I have an interesting first memory for you, as it is precisely of a moment of realizing I lack certain kinds of previous memories. I was always a precocious child, reading Dr. Seuss before the age of 3, according to my parents, and having an early vivid imagination and interest in science and philosophy, which may help to explain the following event in my life. When I was about 3 years old in our central Minnesota home, I woke up in my bed in the middle of the night and had the strange feeling of never having been there before, or for that matter, having been anywhere before. What struck me as most puzzling was that I knew exactly where my room was in the house, where my parents' room was, and so forth. I was especially fixated on the fact that I knew where certain trees were in our front yard, though it was night and I wasn't even facing that way, so I couldn't see them. How then, I wondered, did I know these things? I walked to my parents' room and woke them up, explaining this experience as best I could by saying, I just appeared in my bed. They didn't understand, so I elaborated, you know how a magician can make a rabbit disappear? Well, I just appeared. They still didn't understand, and how could they, for I surely didn't understand it either, and gently put me back to bed. I have long interpreted this as being my first or very first persistent awareness of myself. I had earlier memories of the house and the trees, etc. I even have a very distinct early memory of living temporarily in a relative's basement a few blocks away before we moved into this particular house when I was only 2 years old and my older sister and I were put to bed with Raggedy Ann and Andy dolls, a scenario my parents later confirmed. But perhaps my earlier awareness was only of these various external objects, and it was only after months in the newer house that I became abruptly aware in some deeper and persistent sense of myself as a being in that world. My cousin reported a memory of a similar experience he had outside during the daytime of, oh, here I am. But most others I have related it to, including a few psychologists, were unfamiliar with any similar reports and could shed no light on it. But surely other people have had or can remember similar experiences. So I wish this phenomenon could get more attention. Scott.
That's very interesting. So the idea is that you suddenly became aware of yourself as a subject independent from the world.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know that I have anything like that. I think I was just watching. I watched TV instead.
One way in which I can definitely relate to this is that I distinctly recall a feeling when I was a young child of having not exactly this realization, but lots of realizations that seemed to me incredibly profound, but not in a way that I could explain to anybody else. In the same way that realizations that people believe they have while on psychedelic drugs often are, that there's like an ineffability of the profundity of your realizations. Like you try to put it into words and it just doesn't sound all that interesting or compelling to somebody else. But like in the moment, it feels like you have stumbled across some type of truth that is earth-shaking. And that truth might be the question of like, why am I me when I could have been somebody else? I remember having that thought.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The sort of there but for fortune moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be quite, even you know, today, when you really stop and engage with those thoughts, it can be quite overwhelming.
Okay, we're going to do a message about Weird House Cinema and then close things up.
Yes, please read Lurch's email.
Okay, Lurch says, subject line, Weird House definitive explanation, maybe. So this, I think, is related to our questions about the Bird Eye Gordon movie, Attack of the Puppet People. We were a little bit shaky on the title there, since the people in the movie who seem to be referred to as the puppet people in the title, the people who get shrunk, do not attack anyone except a literal inanimate puppet. So, I don't know, kind of confusing there. But Lurch says, good morning, gentlemen. After a brief hiatus, I'm binging Stuff to Blow Your Mind and just finished the Weird House episode covering Bert I. Gordon's Attack of the Puppet People. I suggest the title is actually more accurate than you might think, though I'm guessing the bullseye either ended up on the cutting room floor or came up a victim of a script rewrite. I'm betting the latter, knowing what little I know of the divine Gordon's habits. besides, if it's the former, my flight of fancy crashes on takeoff. So, if you squint just a little and hold your tongue over your right lower molar, you can accept that Mr. Franz, the villain of the movie, as a puppeteer, could readily be considered a puppet person. Okay. Assume a rewrite changed his old colleague to a past friend from a current collaborator. Thus, you have the requisite plurality to justify the collective people in the title. There's no question Mr. Franz attacks his various victims, of course. The title allows for this twofold interpretation, which seems to me to be a relatively common device from the era, especially when considering movies from Gordon or Corman, referring to Roger. Okay, so I think I see what Lurch is saying here, that if there was an earlier version of the movie in which Mr. Franz was currently a puppeteer, like his friend Emil, they were both puppeteers and they were both turning people into puppets, maybe to, I don't know, use in their puppet shows or something like that. They would be the puppet people, as in the puppet masters turning people into puppets, in which case they're obviously attacking people. It's not, you know, there's no ambiguity there.
Okay.
Lurch goes on. On another note, I'm glad one of your other listeners mentioned Ringo Starr and Caveman. I actually saw this in a theater, and it's been a guilty pleasure ever since. I've been compiling a small list of movie suggestions, and Caveman is right at the top, even above The Happiness of the Katakuris. The list of actors is surprising. You mentioned Ringo, Dennis Quaid, and Barbara Bach, who is dumped by Ringo's character in the movie, but married to him in real life. There's Shelley Long, Jack Gilford, John Matuszak, Evan Kim, what's not to like? This does bring me to another guilty pleasure. Besides monster movies, I love utterly silly spy movies. James Bond is okay, but when Derek Flint, James Coburn, Matt Helm, Dean Martin, or Modesty Blaze, Monica Vitti, are on, I'm parked on the couch wishing I could teach my dog to get me a soda and chips. I'm not sure if they strictly fit your Weird House criteria, but they do fit mine. Keep your eyes on the road, your foot on the floor, and your gravy warm. Regards, Lurch.
Oh, there's a lot of good stuff to discuss there. I'm not sure what to make about the puppet people argument. It's a valid hypothesis. As far as Ringo Starr's Caveman goes, my curiosity is perked. And I don't know, in terms of spy movies, it would be neat for us to do a proper spy movie. I don't know that we've done a real, even a groovy, weird spy movie. And that's the thing. There are plenty of weird spy movies out there. Yeah. I mean, even the James Bond franchise gets weird enough for us with films like Moonraker.
I think we could do Moonraker, or we could do maybe one of the Bava spy movies, like Danger Diabolic or something.
Yeah, you know, if nothing else, it's going to be a colorful affair. All right, well, thanks for writing in, Lurch, and yeah, let us know if any other films and genres come to mind. In the meantime, if you want to catch up on listener mail episodes, well, those are on Mondays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed, core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Artifact or Monster Fact on Wednesdays, and on Friday, we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks to our audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.